Our fourth case for argument this morning is Shirani against the Department of Labor. Ms. Pina.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Dolores Pino on behalf of petitioner Oscar Shirani. This is a petition for review of administrative proceedings resulting in the order of the Department of Labor's Board of Review decision affirming the ALJ decision on Mr. Shirani's complaint alleging violations of the whistleblower protection provision of the Energy Reorganization Act, 42 U.S.C. 5851, and both the ALJ and the Board of Review found that the prima facie showing was not made because the causal connection was not proved, and also stated that Mr. Shirani's case amounted to rank speculation. We're asking this court to reverse this decision, not solely remand it back to the agency due to numerous serious legal errors as well as factual errors. I think the most important legal error is the fact that both the ALJ decision and the Board of Review decision failed to apply the correct statutory burden of proof, whether it's of clear and convincing under the 42 U.S.C.A. 5851 1992 amendments.
Ms. Pino, let me ask you this. Would you concede, I know it's a terrible way to start a question, but would you concede that Mr. Shirani was warned that he likely would not be chosen for the principal manager position because he lacked the core qualifications, and that those who were ultimately chosen for that position were more qualified than he?
I'm not sure how to answer that, Your Honor. In our brief, in our reply brief, in our, my discussion of the clear of Exelon's clear and convincing burden regarding their evidence alleging legitimate non-discriminatory job action, there was no job description that matched principal auditor, which is the job that he held since Ruth Ann Gillis gave it to him in December of 2000. It is unrebutted that his job title was principal auditor. Exelon produced evidence for the record. None of those job descriptions that they produced, they point to RX5 is the job description that Mr. Shirani allegedly applied for, and we've showed that it can't be true that that's the job description he applied for. There is no job description matching principal auditor. So they eliminated, and that's also based on Mr. Shirani's testimony, eliminated his principal auditor job. There was no, during the reorganization of the BSC unit in October of 2001, there was no job description saying principal auditor. And he did testify, and it's unrebutted, that there was never any job description for that job he held for 9 months. Nor was there ever there's no paper, and Ruth Ann Gillis never told him what the requirements of the job were. I can give the pages of the transcript of that if you like. As to warning, Mr. Palacios and the other Exelon person beeped him one morning in October when the time for the applications came. They called him to the breakfast meeting. This is in his testimony, and it's unrebutted. And Mr. Palacios explained to Mr. Shirani that he would likely stay with the BSC unit, and Mr. Shirani testified that he applied for his own job. the principal auditor job that he never applied for a manager position. And my reply brief, I think, shows that very clearly that RX5 cannot be the job that Mr. Shirani applied for because its date was 3 days after the job interview and 9 days after the deadline for applications expired on the 16th. And that, again, RX5 is dated job posting October 25th. And also the signature and also where the signature is placed. It's in the manager position, not in the employee position. I also would point to RX7, which is the E3 senior staff auditor position, which they're saying that he should have applied for. That is dated October 4th. Job posting date October 4th, posting ending date 10/16. So that E3 position does not match the E4 position job posting date if they were supposed to have come out on, you know, the same batch, in the same batch of jobs available for him to apply for at the BSC reorganization time period.
Now, wasn't he accepted for a position in the company during the restaffing in 2000 subsequent to at least some of his protected speech activity?
That's right. He did in while he was doing a nuclear, he reapplied for his auditor position in the supplier evaluation services unit and did retain that position, the same position he had been in.
So wouldn't that sort of indicate that they weren't trying to terminate him for the activity?
They maintained him in his nuclear unit. However, that was... I urge the court to look at the record showing that he did his Holtec U.S. tool and die audit in August, that he... and that he attended the Holtec marketing meeting at the end of November, on November 30th, at which time... And the ARB decision puts in the word voluntarily, but that's irrelevant. It's not an element as to whether something is protected activity, and he did go there to follow up on his August findings. A serious factual error in the ALJ decision, on which the ARB decision is based, is that they totally mixed up that the importance of that meeting. They said it was to follow up a two-year-old audit, but it was to follow up just the audit from August, and then that was in November when he went. And the first offer from Ruth Ann Gillis to leave nuclear was 7 days later. That's per Mr. Shirani's testimony. It also is validated by our Exelon exhibit number Exelon exhibit number 17. No. It's the compensation, I have it. That's the compensation summary that Ruth Ann Gillis was giving him. There are three printouts, and the first one is dated December 7th. I believe there's another one dated December 19th. But the first one is dated it's complainant's exhibit 19. It's the compensation summary for the E4 principal auditor position. And that's, again, it shows what she was offering him, dated 12/7/2000. And then there were several after that when she was correcting that. So, and her testimony is that she offered it to him sometime before she left for her vacation in Colorado, or they were discussing it at some time. And so it puts both, you know, testimonies, Mr. Shirani's and Ms. Gillis's, put that first offer within the first few weeks of December. And so that does the temporal proximity test under the Title VII law, certainly does raise that at very close to the NRC inspector learning of that audit and asking for it, and the Exelon managers knowing about it when he returned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pino. Ms. Hall.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Joanna Hull on behalf of Respondent, United States Department of Labor. The Administrative Review Board correctly dismissed Shirani's whistleblower complaint under the Energy Reorganization Act for two independent reasons. First, Shirani failed to show that anyone who had any input into the decision not to select him for the manager position knew about his protected activity. Second, Shirani failed to show that his protected activity played any role whatsoever in his non-selection for this manager position and automatic termination pursuant to the reorganization protocol. First, I'd like to address a few of the issues that petitioner raised in her argument. With respect to the burden of proof, to prevail on his claim, Shirani had to prove, by a preponderance of the evidence, that he engaged in protected activity that was a contributing factor in an unfavorable personnel decision. While this does involve proving the same elements as those in a prima facie case, the prima facie case itself, which raises merely a presumption of discrimination, drops out after a hearing on the merits.
Now, he has raised at various points evidence of unsolicited interviews for jobs within the company. Does the evidence demonstrate an effort to move him out of the position from which he was engaging in the protected speech?
Absolutely not. Those unsolicited interviews that Shirani alleged were in 2000 during the SES restaffing, which happened before the internal audit restaffing. The evidence does show that he asked his supervisor, Bastier, to nominate him for management positions. So it's not clear that those were actually unsolicited interviews. They were all for management positions, and Shirani had asked his supervisor to be considered for management positions. In addition, he was routinely hailed as one of the best auditors in SES, got good performance reviews, and there was no evidence that he was trying to be forced out of the SES unit. And as you noted, they retained him during the 2000 restaffing as an auditor. The evidence shows that Shirani conducted a concerted campaign beginning in the summer of 2000 to be promoted within the company, to advance himself within the company. And that included contacts with Ruth Ann Gillis, who was on the business side in the internal audit unit. He sent an August 2000 email asking Gillis for help in moving from nuclear. And he later asked Gillis directly for a job in her organization. So Ruth Ann Gillis's December offer of a position to Shirani was solely the result of his attempts to move out of nuclear. In addition, just back on the burden of proof for a moment, the petitioner has stated that the employer failed to carry their burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence that they would have taken the same action in the absence of protected activity. But that only comes into the case if the petitioner has proven by a preponderance of the evidence that his protected activity played some role in the personnel action, which he did not. Therefore, the burden never shifted to the employer in this case because Shirani failed to prove his initial burden. Substantial evidence supports the board's conclusion that no one who had input into the decision not to hire Shirani as a manager had knowledge of his protected activity. Kaya, who was in charge of the internal audit restructuring and made the decision not to hire Shirani, did not know about his protected activities while he worked in the nuclear division. Although Shirani had told her about an audit that was not favorably received, he didn't say what this audit was about or why it wasn't favorably received. For all Kaya knew, it could have been poorly written. In addition, Kaya testified that no one, including Gillis or any officials on the nuclear side, attempted to influence her decision whether to hire Shirani. Likewise, the evidence soundly refutes Shirani's contention that Gillis played any role in his non-selection for the E4 manager position and subsequent termination. Although Gillis was not the decision maker, the board nonetheless considered her knowledge because Shirani alleged that Gillis played a central role in a conspiracy to lure him away from nuclear and organize the restructuring so that there would be no positions that he would qualify for. And substantial evidence again supports the board's finding that Kaya, like Kaya, Gillis did not have any knowledge of Shirani's protected activity. The board applied the correct legal standard with respect to knowledge, analyzed the factual evidence on the issue, and appropriately credited the ALJ's credibility findings of the witnesses. Thus, this court should deny the petition for review on this ground. Even if Shirani had proven that someone who had input into into the decision not to select him for the manager position had knowledge, he failed to prove any causal connection between his protected activity and non-selection for the manager position. The evidence shows that Shirani's termination was solely the result of choices he made, not choices made by Exelon. Contrary to the petitioner's argument in her reply brief that Shirani never applied for a manager position, the evidence strongly shows that Shirani did indeed apply for only one position during the internal audit restructuring, an E4 level position titled principal auditor slash manager. I'd like to point out that the argument petitioner now makes in argument today and in her reply brief that R5 cannot be the position that Shirani applied for is a brand new argument that we haven't seen before, and therefore this court should not address it. In any event, Shirani conceded that he applied for the E4 manager position in the transcript at page 481, and everybody agreed that he submitted an application for this position. There's no dispute that he did apply for a management position, and that was the only position he applied for in the restructuring. Shirani did understand that in order to be considered for positions during this restructuring, he had to apply for them. But he refused to apply for the E3 position, which was the non-management level auditor position. Petitioner states that there was no position equivalent to Shirani's at the time, but we have to acknowledge that the company was going through a reorganization and did change position titles. There were still auditor positions, but after the reorganization, they had a new title, Senior Staff Auditor, and that was the E3 position. Shirani refused to apply for it, applied only for the management position, which he was warned he was not qualified for by both Kaya and Alicia Palacios, who was the ethics director at Exelon. And he nonetheless only applied for the management position, wasn't selected, and was automatically terminated. The ERA's whistleblower protection cannot serve as a shield to protect Shirani from his refusal to apply for any position other than the manager position during this reorganization. In addition, the board did not err in not addressing the Exelon's alleged failure to allow him to return to the nuclear division because this claim is time barred. Shirani requested to return to nuclear in July of 2001, and it was denied approximately a week later, July 26, 2001. The denial of Shirani's request to return to nuclear is a discrete act that started the statutory clock running, in this case 180 days. Shirani presented no evidence why he couldn't have brought a claim.
You're probably now on Mr. Gross's time.
Oh. How are the lights working when we're... Okay. Well, then, in that case, I'll defer to Mr. Gross. Thanks.
Mr. Gross.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Scott Gross, attorney for intervening respondent Exelon Corporation. I'd like to spend my brief time taking up where Ms. Hall left off, and that is the issue of the claim that Mr. Shirani now raises for the first time as a distinct claim, the issues of whether Mr. Shirani should have been allowed to return to Exelon Nuclear in 2001. And I want to make two points on that. The first one is, I think the law that Mr. Shirani is attempting to rely on in that context does not support his raising a new claim at this stage of the proceedings. As your honors are aware, in employment discrimination cases and retaliation cases, it is not unusual for a plaintiff who has been terminated to argue that there were a series of adverse actions that occurred prior to that that suggest there was some kind of animus that infected or tainted the termination without making each of those actions separately actionable as a distinct claim. Here, Mr. Shirani did just that, and sporadically throughout some of his briefs and some of his testimony, he raised the issue of his request to return to nuclear, just like he raised the issues of not getting a promotion in nuclear prior to his departure from nuclear, just like he raised the issues of the transfer from nuclear to BSC as a result of Mr. Shirani's efforts to obtain such a transfer. Clearly, because all of those actions along the way were raised to support his case of termination, that cannot be elevated to specific distinct claims that the Department of Labor must address and analyze in the written decisions. Of course, we know that they looked at the evidence and addressed that as they reviewed it. The other point I think is important to make, that even if the scattered references throughout some of the testimony and some of the pleadings at the department level did elevate his arguments about returning to nuclear in 2000 to a distinct claim, he abandoned that claim with the Administrative Review Board when he filed his appeal of the administrative law judge's decision. Nowhere in any of the filings with the Administrative Review Board did Shirani ever argue or even mention the transfer issue back to Exelon Nuclear in 2001. And having abandoned that claim at that level, clearly he cannot do so, bring it up at this point.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Pino?
Regarding the Department of Labor attorney's argument that we haven't talked about RX5, I don't understand that argument. It goes from, in our reply brief, approximately pages 19 to 23, where we're addressing the Exelon's evidence, the alleged evidence of a non-discriminatory legitimate reason. And again, she's stating the very much wrong standards evidentiary framework cited, set out in the statute, Section B3 of 5851 of the Whistleblower Protection Act specifically states the prima facie showing, that's a showing first, not by preponderance of the evidence first, then it goes to clear and convincing, and then back for preponderance of the evidence, and I think, and then a second shot from the employer, clear and convincing. Both the Trimmer decision and the Herman decision.
Thank you, Ms. Pino.
State those.
The case will be taken under advisement.